Stephen Petro here. Thanks for listening to The Civilist. If you haven't already, please subscribe on iTunes. Okay, here's our show. Welcome to The Civilist from WUNC and PRI. It's a podcast where we explore how to talk respectfully about our toughest political and personal dilemmas. I'm your host, Stephen Petro. Today's episode is all about this year's not-so-civil election season. My guests are two undergrads from Duke University, and they're taking questions from young people about politics. Like, is it okay for a jaded millennial to skip out on voting?
It's like taking a test in college. You don't choose the perfect answer. You choose the one that's best, even though it's not amazing.
And this question about incivility online.
I can't even go on Instagram or any other social media anymore without seeing offensive posts and memes. And I don't know how to engage with people online anymore without just getting frustrated.
All that and more coming up on this special election episode of The Civilist. Now it's time for new rules for better behavior. Because it's election season, I've called in two guest experts who have a lot at stake, their futures. Both are undergraduates at Duke University, my alma mater. One leans right, the other left. With me today is Matthew King. He's a columnist at the Duke Chronicle and a political science major. He's a straight guy from Virginia and a junior. And he's politically conservative, which may come into play today. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And Elizabeth Hatfield studies psychology and cultural anthropology. She's a senior and has done research on loneliness and belonging in college communities. Liz identifies as transgender. She's also pretty liberal, she says. Thanks for coming on, Liz.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
Great. So before we dive into our questions about the election, let's talk about what each of us is doing to stay sane in this political season. And I'll go first. So since I stopped drinking 2 years ago, I can't go swimming in my martini glass just to kind of get out of it. I have been doing two things. I am unfollowing people like crazy. Every time they kind of go over the edge, it's like click, unfollow, they disappear for a while. And then I'm doing this other experiment. When people write me in my role as a journalist, I get a lot of nasty emails and with a lot of name calling. And then usually the third or fourth sentence is, and I disagree with you about such and such. And so I've been writing back saying, for instance, if it had been you, Matthew, dear Matthew, thanks for writing me. I'm not really sure why you had to use that particular language with me, but can we talk about the issue at hand? I'd really like to know what you're thinking. And so far, this experiment has borne out that about two-thirds of those people write me back, and they start off with, dear Stephen, I apologize for calling you this or that, and then they get into the issue. And so it seems like a way to really kind of bring the civility into the discussion rather than just this flame-throwing. So Liz, how are you coping this campaign season?
I, like you, really need to disengage sometimes. So I'm a big TV watcher. Even when I'm stressed with school or anything, I will take a break during the day and make sure I watch at least like one episode of my favorite TV show, usually a comedy because the dramas, they suck you in and also get you riled. But with everything going on, it's so hard to avoid everything. And it's so important to remember that not everything out there is doom and gloom and stress. And just sitting there and watching your comedy can lift my mood just enough to get me through some of these tough political times.
And better than drugs.
I mean, yeah.
Matthew, how about you?
For me, I think the best thing is really when I have a phone call with my granddad. We try to talk at least every week. And he knows that I'm a political junkie. And so he always will ask, well, what do you think about this or that? He watches television news. He reads the news. So we can always talk about it. And with the exception of one argument we had when we were on opposite sides in 08, our discussions have been totally civil, and it always, even if we end up disagreeing, I always feel like there is shared love there in that relationship, and that there aren't really lines that I could cross to lose that kind of love or that relationship.
Well, I really like what you were saying about making that human connection with your granddad, and I think we sort of lose that in this world these days. So let's turn to the first question. And it comes from someone who is tired of this whole political fracas.
Hi, Stephen. I am a current college student, and I am calling about this election season. I'm just so tired of everything related to the election. Everybody seems so angry, whether it's angry about Hillary's emails or the fact that Bernie isn't the candidate. People are mad about Trump and Black Lives Matters and the police. And I just feel like I can't even go on Instagram or any other social media anymore without seeing offensive posts and memes. And I don't know how to engage with people online anymore without just getting frustrated. Should I even try to say anything?
So Matthew, let's start with you here. Is it worth getting into these kind of politically contentious debates online? And if so, how do you handle them?
So I think there are a lot of parts of that question, and I'd like to address the first part, what I really think is the core of that, which is the emotion of anger. And anger is sort of an unpredictable emotion. I think it's okay to be angry. Anger can be constructive, but I think where anger can be harmful is in interpersonal relationships and in interactions. And for me, a general rule of thumb I use is if I'm particularly upset about something, I'll sleep on it. It's that simple. And 75% of the time, I won't end up pursuing it. I'll just let it slide and let it be. And then the other 25% of the time, I might approach it in sort of a more level-headed or a more nuanced way the next day. And I find that that's more constructive. And then to your question about engaging with people online in arguments, I think it's more difficult than when it is in person because you don't have that other sort of 90% of communication. You don't have the body language, the tone of voice, these other things that could be really helpful. And even things we're seeing like punctuation, periods can be interpreted as being aggressive because now suddenly a lot of text messages were leaving off punctuation, or if you don't have an exclamation point, you aren't excited. So I think it's harder when you're not in person, and so you have to understand that it is much more likely that your words will be misinterpreted or interpreted in a way different from the way you intended. And so in that case, really just best to limit the extent to which it can be misinterpreted.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And for those of you listening, we're all making eye contact here as we're talking. And I think it really does make a difference because you can see how somebody's facial expressions change to reflect their tone and emotion in all of this. So, Liz, much of the political conversation this presidential campaign goes to issues like gun violence and LGBTQ rights, and specifically a lot of vitriol against trans people. When you see posts and memes and tweets that are really anti-trans, how do you handle that? How do you respond?
Often, I just have to take a step back and not engage because usually, and this is kind of on the same token as what Matthew said, anger just breeds anger.
Well, let me ask you this, because one of my operating principles is that silence equals acceptance, so that if we don't respond to something that's offensive, many people will take it as, well, I agree with that. So when do you decide that it's necessary or it's important to step up?
That is when I read it and I know that they're not just trying to start an argument, because there are some times when you can tell by reading something that they just want to start a fight and nothing's going to happen. Whereas sometimes somebody's posting something and they don't even realize that it's offensive. Everybody has a viewpoint. Everybody has a story. Everybody is coming from somewhere. And it's really important to recognize that. So when I read a post and I see that there is a story behind that and that that person has something that brought them to having that point of view, that's when I'll engage and say, hey, what makes you think that? Why do you think that? It's important to treat them as a real person, because a person is not just their ideas. And you want to talk about their ideas and not attack them as a person.
Yeah, I really like that. And I would say my own advice is that when things start to go down that rabbit hole, I'm just as likely to, I know this is like a really baby boomer thing to do, but to pick up the phone, even though it's a cell phone, and call this person and have a conversation or set up a time to go have coffee somewhere. You know, because I think, as we said earlier, you know, making contact, treating each other as real people, not as sort of these objects that are in cyberspace, can make such a difference. And then we're also able to listen. And we're not able to listen when we're online. It's just people, and by and large, you know, just this is what I think, and I don't really care what you have to say about that. And a couple of other things that come to mind are, You know, humor is very much in the eye of the beholder. And in this political season, I think that humor is often very dangerous. So I've been staying away from humor. And I've been trying to keep to facts and figures, like you had mentioned, Matthew, when presenting things and politely questioning people's sources when I think they're suspect. So great answers. Let's move on to question number two. And our caller is really jaded about Hillary and the Donald. In fact, he may not vote.
Hey, Stephen. I'm thinking of just not voting. I know it's supposed to be my civic duty, but I don't like either of the major presidential candidates, and I don't really identify with either major party. A few of my friends say they're not voting. Should I just stay out of it if I can't get behind somebody, or I don't know, what should I do?
So Liz, two questions. Do you understand where this caller is coming from? And then how do you engage with someone who feels so disconnected from this process?
Every single day, I think, wow, what is going on in the world? But then again, I think, when has there ever been an election where somebody said, wow, I've really found the perfect ideal candidate for me? Maybe there have been. I'm pretty young.
This is actually, I think, both of your first presidential election as voters, right?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, and I would wager to say some people were thinking about that about Obama in 2008.
That's a good point. Well, that could be a whole other podcast.
Right, yes.
But going on to your second question, this is what I usually say to people or even to myself when I feel disengaged, and that's that being apolitical or saying I'm not a political person is a massive, massive privilege. And I don't mean to privilege shame. It's cool to have privileges. But at the same time, so many of us, for example, me being transgender, that is a highly politicized identity. So even if I take breaks during the day and think I just gotta watch my TV show, I cannot take a break in my life from being politicized. My body, my identity, my mind are politicized. And I wager to guess that something about you or a friend is politicized. And think about that. And I know that maybe you can't find the perfect candidate for you in this election, but it's like taking a test in college. You don't choose the perfect answer. You choose the one that's best, even though it's not amazing. And that's what we have to do sometimes. Just choose the one that you think is going to best represent these identities.
Thanks, Liz. So, Matthew, you lean right, Liz leans left. Do you have a different answer to that question because of the way you lean, so to speak?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't approach it from the perspective of identity politics. I would emphasize sort of the things that affect all of us that government does. So if you're a voter, if you're thinking of voting in an election, think about a time when you were a kid in a classroom and you didn't have a good teacher, and then could maybe contrast it with a time that you had an outstanding teacher, and think about the policies that make it possible for you to have a great teacher or a not so good one. And think about the policies that would lead you to drive on a pothole ridden road versus the ones that would let you sort of have a wonderful clean paved road. Think about a time that you were proud about the role America was playing in the world, some action taken overseas, and a time when you weren't so proud or when you think there was a mistake. Think about all those things and realize that it is the policymakers, the politicians that we elect, who are ultimately responsible for a lot of those issues. And they aren't just things that you felt in the past, but they're going to be recurring in the future as well.
I really like that. And I would say for myself, I think we have two primary candidates now who have their flaws. In my view, one of them has many more flaws than the other. But that's beside the point. I care deeply about a number of issues, and I think you guys do, as well as folks who are listening. And you know, it's everything from the economy to foreign policy to climate change or the war on coal, however you want to look at it. And those issues matter so greatly that I think we need to overcome whatever reticence we might have about candidate A or candidate B and look to our community interest as we go about this election. And I think that the notion of being a voter is such an American thing. And so I hope people will come out and vote regardless of who they vote for. Dare I say that?
Or the reason.
Yes.
Go vote for something.
Yeah. Yes. And our last caller is actually ready to vote if only her family would get out of her way.
Hey, Stephen, I have a question for you. So this upcoming election will be the first one that I'll be able to vote in since I became old enough, and I actually do know who I want to vote for at the state and local levels, But I live at home with my parents and my brother, and they are constantly bringing up the election. They are basically always trying to start an argument with me and get me to change my mind about who I want to vote for. So I've been avoiding them a little lately because of this problem, but I figure I better come up with a better solution since they are my family and I live with them. So what am I supposed to do when this happens?
So Matthew, a real-life situation, actual face-to-face debate within a family. What's your advice?
Wow, so this is a very real question and one that I'm just sort of trying to grapple with. So, you know, I think there are a couple of approaches you could take. The first would be just to surrender in public or, you know, to your family out loud and say, you know what, you're right, I'll vote this way. And then vote however the heck you want to, because we have a secret ballot in America and that's your privilege to do that.
You mean lie?
Yeah, I think you could. You could.
There's a special rule that it's okay with family.
I feel like it's a white lie you could have with your family. So I think that's okay. I think that's not the best solution though, and the more optimal solution would be to really engage with your family about the factors in your decision and why you might be choosing what you've chosen to sort of value and plug into your formula to decide who you're voting for. And really engage in a real conversation with them. And if they don't want to engage in that, then I don't think they have any right to criticize you for the decision you're making.
Right. And Liz, what do you think about what the caller said, that her family is always trying to start an argument, trying to get her to change her mind? How do you discuss politics in the flesh with people who disagree with you, and especially family members?
This is also very real for me. Before, when I started college, I would come home every break and get in a huge fight with my dad about politics. And so I had to develop some strategies to be able to navigate these things. And I think this goes back to what I mentioned earlier. I think it's important to remember that your family, they're real people. You're talking to a real person, and they probably have a reason that they believe this and a reason that they're trying to convince you. I don't think, at least thinking about my family, I don't think that they would try and convince me of something, and they haven't, because they didn't love me. They love me, so they want me to share the same views as them, which is an interesting way to do things. But I know my close friends, I want them to see what I see and understand what I understand. And that's not always the way it is. And so if this caller in person really feels like the dialogue is getting really unproductive, then it might be best to actually try and shut it down. There's good ways to do this while still being respectful to your parents. A very concrete way I'd say go to about this, and you could do this when, if you're having face-to-face and personal conflict with really anyone, is the compliment sandwich, where you say something nice like, hey, I know you love me and I know you have really interesting political views that you believe in very strongly. Start with the compliment, and then you say the harder thing. Maybe, hey, but I'm really struggling. I feel like we get in arguments a lot, and I feel like our conversations aren't very productive, and I don't think they're going very well. And so maybe it'd be best if we try and talk about other things. We're a family. I'm sure we have lots of shared experiences we can talk about instead of this, and then end with a compliment again because of the sandwich and say, but I still love you. I'm not mad at you, and I just want to move forward.
And if I could jump in and add something, I think it also could be worthwhile to turn the tables, right? They've been the ones who've been asking you these questions all these times and questioning why you believe what you believe. So you have to get them on the other side to defend why they believe what they believe. And I think in that process and that dialogue or that conversation, they might discover some flaws in what they believe, or they might sort of realize the reasoning doesn't entirely add up, and they might change their mind a little bit, or at least be more understanding of why you struggle when you have to go through and explain and really justify everything that you believe.
I completely agree with you.
That's really interesting. And I love the idea of the compliment sandwich. I'd never heard of that. I hope there's a low-fat version also. But Matthew, what you were just saying reminds me of how the marriage equality movement came to be successful in terms of changing hearts and minds. And that is that LGBT people talked to their family members, their friends, their colleagues about why same-sex marriage mattered. They entered into conversations. They got into debates. They used facts and figures. And that is how minds can be changed, no matter what the topic is. And so I think it really is important to have this back and forth, not to stay closed and not to stay, you know, in your own silo. So that's point number one. Number two is, you know, families are really special. I'll speak for my family. They know my hot buttons. They may try to provoke me, but it's really my choice as to whether I get provoked or not, or whether and if I respond that way. So I think we can keep how we respond separate from what people are trying to do to us. And then that allows us to kind of maintain the deportment that we want and continue to engage in the kind of conversations that we want and hopefully persuade people to our point of view. But remembering that it's not about winning. It's about coming together in the end.
It's beautiful.
So that's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to Elizabeth Hatfield and Matthew King, two Duke University students, for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, great.
And if you have a question about how to handle a tough personal situation appropriately, record a voice memo on your phone and email it to thecivilistpodcast@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 919-263-0929. You can also submit questions or any comments, really, on the PRI app. It's available for iOS and Android. Just use the handy-dandy voice memo feature for The Civilist. We'd love to hear from you. That's all for now. Please join us next time when MIT's Sherry Turkle talks with me about how to reclaim conversation in the digital age. And more brilliant young guest experts answer questions about stereotypes, trigger warnings, and whether it's okay for white people to use the N-word when singing along with their favorite hip-hop tracks. The Civilist is a production of WUNC, PRI, and me. My producer is Rebecca Martinez. Mark Blasco wrote our theme song. Special thanks to Kate Goodnight, Kristen Lampkowski, and Brian Burns. I'm Stephen Petro. Thanks for listening. Like what you heard? Consider giving us a rave review on iTunes. And while you're at it, why not share this episode with a friend who could stand to be a little more civil? Thanks.